So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
The fuck?
Brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, as always. Tell you what, going to have a good show tonight, as always, but like every Monday night, we got to start with this little thing called Mr. Martin. How you doing?
Oh, Mr. Martin's doing okay. Working hard, working a little late, and that's always, although I'm getting, sometimes I'll say I'm getting too old for this crap, but definitely better than trying to figure out what to do with my time. So.
Well, I agree with you there. I tell you what. You know, I put in a lot of hours myself. My time is never in a situation I don't know what to do with it. However, my time...
Now, Ed, come on, walking doesn't count, all right? Come on now.
And that's tonight's show, folks. Thanks for joining. I tell you, man, and my time may be limited. I go to trial tomorrow, so, you know, so we'll see what happens. If I'm here tomorrow night, great. If not, it'll be you and Dale the Truth, I'm sure.
Oh, and if you're in the pokey, Dale is going to be in rare form. I'll be making jokes, by the way. I will be, if you get locked up, I will be making jokes, just so you know.
Oh, that's no problem.
My heart will be with you. You'll have my sympathy. But as far as on air, no, the jokes will be relentless.
Well, if I go to jail, the big joke is going to be on the American taxpayer and the judicial system. This has got to be the craziest thing in the world. But people didn't want to come to this show to hear about my problems. No, they want to hear about the world in general. I tell you what, as projected, we talked about this last week, Ed. Governor Steve Beshear did sign the dropout age bill that was put in front of him today. Good, bad?
Well, we talked about it. Indifferent. It's indifferent. I mean, the good of it is it does send a message and understand the sentiment involved.
Mm-hmm.
Bad is, practically speaking, kid who doesn't want to be in school, his parents are either unwilling or unable to keep him in school. And I say him. I mean, it could be her, too. But if they don't want to... they're not wanting to be there, they're going to be disruptive. And they're going to be, you know, even if they're not disruptive, they're going to be sort of a boat anchor on the other kids trying to learn. So,
right.
You know, 6-1, half dozen of the other, it's whatever. Say, why don't they look a little, get a little more systemic about it and just ask themselves, okay, why are kids dropping out? What are we failing to get through to with these kids to tell them, you know, that, like, hey, employers really wouldn't mind seeing a college, you know, a high school degree. College might be better, but come on, guy, really.
Well, I mean, that's interesting, but I honestly, truly, as I talked about last week, I see this as being nothing more than putting an added burden on the classrooms today, making it tougher for the teachers to do their job. I see nothing here at all that tells me that this is a good thing. It's going to cost us more money. Bashir is lying when he says it's going to save us millions of dollars. He actually thinks this is going to keep people out of jail, which is a laughable statement in itself.
Yeah.
You know. So, you know, and him and Julian Carroll both agree on that, which is really funny. But I find it very disturbing. I don't like this bill at all. I knew it was going to get signed, as you did, and, you know, it makes no sense to me. You know, we do have some other news, though, some good news, actually. Goldman Sachs. Have you seen that story yet about Goldman Sachs?
Depends on which one. I see a lot of stories about Goldman Sachs. Most of them are not real good.
Well, there's a story out today. You can catch this out over at HuffPo. Yeah, I know. HuffPo is a source. But Goldman Sachs, everybody knows, was a leader in this whole bank crisis, mortgage crisis, loan crisis, bailout crisis. You put a name here. But Goldman Sachs filed an appeal with the U.S. Supreme Court because the court had said, the court had decided that Goldman Sachs had to defend itself against claims that it misled investors on mortgage securities that created the 2008 financial crisis. So they appealed this to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, you know what? We agree with the lower court. So they basically refused to consider Goldman's appeal on the decision by the Second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in New York. So now we have a situation where they can be held accountable. What do you think about that?
Well, I think the whole Supreme Court thing and everything, it's all a technique called starving. They really need to get some class action suits, and they need to get some state attorney generals in on it. Kentucky's, I mean, he can tag along, but they need to get guys like Schneiderman from New York to go in and get them. You know, it needs to be class action because Goldman's got money, Goldman's got lawyers, Goldman's got all this techno babble stuff that they're going to talk about. It's going to be expensive to get them, but I'm glad at least they're actually being held. It's joint several liability. I'm glad they're being held for that because, you know, they said for a long time they wrap up bags of poop and sell them as like gold bars. You know, they're painting poop with things and selling it as gold. They really are. They don't know what they're selling. People buying it don't know what they're buying. It's getting AAA ratings because that's the way the game's played. And that's fraud.
There's no doubt.
I would have been stunned, honestly, even as lame as the courts can be sometimes, you know, and even more lame, most of the AGs and our national attorney general, Holder, can be. It wouldn't have surprised me, would have disappointed me had they not done it. But it's like, hey, all right, apparently whoever, you know, in New York or whoever's bringing this, mm-hmm. has got the ducks in a row. So it's like, good, you know, follow the leader. Let's go get them.
What was really interesting here, what really makes the story interesting to me is I'm curious to see what's going to happen going forward. The NECAIBEW, the Union Health and Welfare Fund for these guys, are the ones who actually filed the suit. You know, they sued Goldman Sachs on behalf of their investors because of some stock certificates or mortgage-backed certificates that Goldman didn't even own. They were actually backed by mortgages from the same lenders. So anyway, what this did is this opened the door, and Goldman Sachs already has thousands of lawsuits from investors seeking to recoup their losses on the mortgage securities. Now, you know, for one thing, there's no such thing as a mortgage security, folks. Many people don't know that. You can have a mortgage, but as soon as they bundle these things up and put them on the stock market, this now becomes stock. So in essence, as far as I understand the law, and nobody's going to go down this road, they refuse to, but as I understand the law, when these people are foreclosing on your home And that home is being traded on the stock market. That debt is being traded on the stock market as a security. They no longer have a mortgage title to your home. They no longer have claim to your home. And when you want to daggone go in and repossess something, that requires a vote by the stockholders, a 100% vote by the stockholders. And none of these houses have been foreclosed based on our stockholder vote. But that's a long, complicated story. We'll have to do a show on it one night. But what's really interesting here is the bank basically used the argument that if they let the Second Circuit decision stand, which means they can be held accountable, then Wall Street will lose tens of billions of dollars. And as you just mentioned, Eric Holder, last week we talked about this, Eric Holder has already said that there are some banks that are too big to prosecute. That would include Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, whoever. So is this going to be a contrast with the Obama administration going forward? You know, do you think they're going to get involved in this?
I think it's going to be tough for them. I mean, they get involved in, like, the General Motors bankruptcy and bastardized the law there, screwing the bondholders ahead of the stockholders, which, you know, at least if the stockholders were unions. But I think this one is a political – this one's a hot potato. I don't think they will. I don't think – first off, I think I think so little of Holder. And of course, Obama, you know, with little or no private sector experience, I don't think they know what's going on. I mean, and if they come out with a blanket immunity, with the gun running thing, the Fast and Furious, they come out with some kind of blanket immunity during, like they did there, with all the evidence with Matt Taibbi and everybody else at the Rolling Stone and the HuffPo and pretty much every financial blogger that's got a brain, if they come out in defense of the banks after loaning them trillions of dollars, after letting them go back to mark the fantasy on their assets, after all they've done to the banks and all the banks have done to people and municipalities, you know, I'm sure at some point we'll get into the MSD in Jefferson County, Alabama, and Detroit. But after all they've done, it would be really interesting to see. I don't think they'll do it. I think they're going to look at it as a matter of public opinions and say they simply don't want to have to answer to the public. You know, when the public says, "Oh my God, are you honestly defending these bastards? Are you honestly going to wave your magic, you know, wave your hand and say these are not the financial institutions you're looking for?"
Well, yeah, and, you know, that's the thing, because you're not dealing with just Goldman Sachs. I mean, this sets the stage for everybody else. You've got all kinds of people out there, you know. Just an example, I mean, let's look at Wells Fargo, Bank of America, Capital One. You know, all of these different people have the same problem right now. They're facing thousands of lawsuits, and they're all scared that this is going to cost them billions of dollars. Well, this isn't costing them anything, because we, the people, gave them billions of dollars in a bailout. So they're going to have to give some of that money back. Now they have to give it to individuals that they illegally confiscated their house. They're going to have to give it to the pension funds that they illegally raided with these swaps and everything else, the interest rate swaps and the LIBOR scandal and all of that. You know, and I tell you, if you really want to look at a great example of how screwed up this is, we can go right to Birmingham, Alabama, who has already filed bankruptcy because of these interest rate swaps and the LIBOR scandal. You can go to California, who's already had two towns file bankruptcy there. And more importantly, the biggest one to date that's getting ready to file bankruptcy is right here in Detroit, is it not? Or Detroit,
yeah,
Michigan.
Yeah, Detroit has been hit with double and triple whammies, all effectively by the banks. The banks have, you know, Detroit has its problems, but so much of the money that they don't have to keep the city running is going to the banks. It's going to buy out. It's going to buy out the swaps that they're getting creamed on, like MSD is getting creamed on. And then it's going. You know, the banks are also responsible for you know, the housing bubble, which when it popped in Detroit, it really popped. So, yeah.
Well, you look at it. In Detroit, the winter's in a financial crisis. And you go to Bloomberg.com, folks, to check this out. I'll put a link in the chat room for you. But in Detroit, I mean, you know, Wall Street bankers are the ones who actually made the money. They took $474 million from Detroit in financial benefits, you know, and Detroit can't even keep the streetlights working. And they did this as part of the borrowing package. These are the points and all the other stuff you hear so much about. But they get up
top. It's the anti-Greece. I mean, Detroit should have done what Greece did. Mm-hmm. You know, Greece is the one that said, screw you. You know, you sold us bad financial products. You gave us bad advice. In the big picture, you made a bad bet. You shouldn't have loaned us the money because we were crap, and we're not going to pound the taxpayers for it, which is exactly what Greece said. Detroit, on the other hand, with their corrupt mayor and there's all their cronies and everything, they said, well, we have to pay the banks. Oh, no, can't pay the utility bill. Oh, we have to pay the banks. You should tell the banks to screw themselves, file bankruptcy. Say, come get us. We don't have any money. Screw you.
Well, that's exactly it.
All the politicians made sure the banks were taken care of. They're probably getting money under the table, probably got nephews and nieces working at the bank, and they were probably counting on getting hired themselves, a bunch of corrupt bastards.
Well, there's no doubt about it. And a lot of this, the city started borrowing, Detroit started borrowing money to plug the holes in their budget in 2005. This was under former mayor Kwame Kilpatrick. Kwame Kilpatrick was just found guilty on corruption charges, 24 charges to be exact. He was found guilty of 24 corruption charges, and the list goes on and on. Racketeering. I can read a whole thing here, a whole list to you, but it's really not worth the time. But this guy was doing all this. He was stealing from these guys. He was living on credit cards that weren't his. And the banks, UBS AG, Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, J.P. Morgan Chase, all of these guys came together, and they issued about $3.7 billion in bond issues. Okay? Now, this was supposed to cover pension shortfalls, debt payments, et cetera. This has been total since 2005. The reality is, to get that money lent to them, they paid out about $474 million in fees. That's your underwriting expenses, bond insurance premiums, fees they were charged for wrong-way bets on interest swaps. This is all according to Bloomberg. And to tell you how significant that number is, Ed, that number equals the city's 2013 budget for their entire police and fire protection units. That's crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'll tell you. The city's just like any individual. You have a choice. I mean, granted, if you're gonna tell these banks and then states and the governments, like Iceland, they also have a choice. It's like, look, you're either going to pound your taxpayers, you're going to pound your citizens, you're going to raid your pensions, you're going to be derelict in the basic services like streetlights and road maintenance. You can either tell them that they're going to get the short end of it, or if you can grow a set, you can tell the banks they're going to get the short end of it. It's like, go on, good luck, sue us. We don't have any money. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
We'd like to sell you a city block, and oh, by the way, when you repossess that city block, we're going to value it just like you bastard valued the gold painted clobs of poop that you sold as derivatives.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and that's exactly it. I mean, if you look at Kwame Kilpatrick, okay, the former Detroit mayor. I mean, this guy was found guilty of racketeering, extortion, attempted extortion, bribery, mail fraud, wire fraud, filing false tax returns. Him and a contractor buddy, his name Bobby Ferguson, were found guilty together on most of those. Even this former mayor's dad, he was found guilty of a tax count. Okay, but what's really interesting here is this mayor had actually already served over a year in prison for perjury, and spent $840,000 more during his tenure than he earned on personal expenses. So it's clearly obvious he stole almost $1 million from taxpayers just for his personal side of it. Okay, he gave out $84 million in contracts to his friend Bobby Ferguson and other business people. They were forced to hire Ferguson as a contractor in order to get city deals. It's totally amazing what's going on here in Detroit. You know, so you've got all of these things going on. Corruption is going rampant in there. And then you've got the banks in there. How much kickback did he get from the banks? I mean, the largest part of this $474 million is owed for derivatives. There were supposed to be a way to lower borrowing costs on the variable rates. It did not do that, as we know. You know, so how do we get into this? How does Detroit get out of this without going bankrupt?
They do. They just need to go bankrupt. I mean, it's sad when they sold the Silver Dome years ago for what amounted to like a penny on the dollar. You know, it was worth more in scrap metal than they sold it for. But I don't know why politicians have this problem, but the fact of the matter is when you're bankrupt, you're bankrupt. Deal with it. I think sometimes it's a matter of pride. Sometimes it's a matter of, you know, I'm sure with a lot of politicians, hey, look at D.C. They're just printing money like it's going out of style because they don't want to admit that they're out of money.
But this is what makes it.
You got to make some tough choices, but they don't want the gravy train to stop. And I guess they think they can keep imagining it and imagining it so they can, you know, so they can finally get all that money wired like corporations do to the Virgin Islands or something, and they can get the hell out of Dodge. I don't understand it. I mean, when you're out of money, you're out of money. Man the hell up and admit it and do what you got to do. And if it's deal with the shame of going bankrupt. Deal with the, you know.
Well, there's no shame. There's no shame for municipality.
You go down in history. You go down in history. You know, they write a little asterisk, and you know, this was the mayor that bankrupted Detroit. You know, he filed for bankruptcy. You know, whatever.
There's no shame for Detroit City to go bankrupt, considering everything that was done. And quite frankly, Detroit is a great example of why the Supreme Court was right not to get involved in the Goldman Sachs mess and let these banks stand alone. Let's go to the phones. 720 number, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm listening to y'all. Y'all talking about the conservative bankrupt. Because all this took place 30 years ago when the conservative was in charge for all this. That's why we paying for it today when all you white men was in charge and y'all.
Wait. Now you're going to blame the rich white guy?
No, y'all ain't rich.
That's what you just said.
This country belongs to the Asian people. Y'all hurting just like me. I live in Colorado. I see more broke white folks than anybody. So y'all ain't rich. Y'all losing your mind. Y'all that went crazy because a black man sitting in the White House. Y'all that went crazy.
Wait. Who said it? Was Barack Obama in the White House in 2005?
No, Barack Obama just cleaned up y'all madness. He just cleaned up the madness what white men made for America.
He cleaned up y'all madness.
The country is moving every day. You remember they said, how would this country be without Hispanic people or black? How would this country be without white men? It would be a great country. Especially conserving white men. Y'all are a disgusting group of people.
Oh, brother, get rid of this clown. I tell you what, that's hilarious. That is totally hilarious. You got a black guy out here blaming the white man for all the problems, you know, and then saying it's because Barack Obama is out there cleaning up a mess that he inherited. He clearly, I don't know, man, that's about as racist as it gets, in my opinion. Nobody said anything about the white man, and Barack Obama wasn't in office in 2005 when Detroit started seeing problems, was he? That's hilarious to me, Ed. That's hilarious.
And the thing is, we didn't even mention Barack Obama, but what the hell? You know, the fact is if there's a colored guy that's derelict, it's going to be Eric Holder. He's not prosecuting where he should. I'm sure Barack Obama has something to do with that, but Barack Obama's not fixing anything. He's loaning, he's printing money, but he didn't break it. I'll give him that much. It wasn't done 30 years ago either. It was done in 1999 and 2000. It was done about 15 years ago.
What's hilarious here is you know, we've covered Detroit's situation extensively for the last few weeks, as well as Chicago and a few other inner cities that are really struggling. We've also talked about Birmingham, Alabama, who was the largest municipal bankruptcy in U.S. history until we had a town in California do it. All we're doing is sitting here talking about the problems with our politicians. We're the ones who talk about the two-party system as the uniparty. We're the ones who say that George Bush was as bad as Barack Obama. And we've got some clown calling in here telling us it's the white guys that are a problem, that a black man's trying to fix it, and he doesn't even do his own research or even know what the hell we're all about or what we do here. It's fascinating to me because you can't sit here. Nobody can rationally sit here and accuse Barack Obama. Caller, you can keep hitting the button. You're not getting back on air unless you're willing to have a discussion. We're not going to turn this into a race-baiting show. If you're willing to have a discussion, I tell you what, I'm going to open up your line, give you one chance to have a rational discussion. But if you go to the rate-basing thing, you won't get back on. We're going to go right back to this caller. I'm going to try to be fair here. Yes, sir, you're back on. Can we have a discussion now?
Yes, we can.
Thank you very much. Now, what I'm trying to tell our audience is this. We have not brought up Barack Obama in this situation at all. The problems in Detroit started when the auto industry decided to bail out and leave Detroit hanging. Okay, that's when it started in Detroit. But Detroit is just one example. We have talked exclusively on this show. We bring it to people's attention about all these different cities across America that are going bankrupt on the verge of it. Birmingham, Alabama was the victim of the same situation that Detroit is in right now. They were the, at that time, largest municipal bankruptcy in U.S. history just a couple of years ago because of the daggone illegal rate swaps, the LIBOR scandals, and the illegal crap that these banks are doing, like Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, and these others. This isn't a Barack Obama situation. As a matter of fact, we continually tell the world we live in these days of what we call the Uniparty. The Republicans are no different than
yeah.
the Democrats. The white man is no different than the black man.
And I mean, when we trash our own city, which is MSD, I mean, we'll be straight up.
But see, y'all got to look at it like this, sir.
As far as we know, there's not a black man involved with the swaps that they managed to get us tied into there.
Sure.
Hello?
Hang on, can I comment? Yes, sir, please.
Well, we got to look at it like this. Even before Barack Obama and all that, okay, this country was going bankrupt when we went over and started two wars, when we paid for, all them cities that had things that was going on, like Detroit, Chicago, New York. You know, when we got them conservative governments, when we got them and they started blocking off and cutting everything and taking stuff that training jobs and everything that was working in these cities, till we lost to the Tea Party in 2008, everything changed. Because them
Let
two wars that we had, when Barack Obama walked in there, they was there. When he came in, we got more jobs in this country and had in 8 years of George Bush. And so this man did, but I'm sorry, you guys will never give him his credit.
Actually, the labor participation rate is as low as it's been for a long, long time. But
what you're failing to understand here, I mean, if we're going to go down this road, I'm happy with that. That doesn't bother me a bit.
But the country, we get back
reality.
On track.
Well, let's
we
look
get
at the reality
back on
here.
Track. We've
who,
been on them.
No. Who you keep talking about the conservatives took over, and they're the ones that have destroyed this country, okay? When you look at Detroit, for example, when you look at Chicago, for example, when you look at Birmingham, for example, these three bankrupt cities that are going to require billions of dollars in federal bailout just to survive, okay? When you look at these cities, do you know who's been
the same money?
Cities?
Okay, let me say this. What about when they had that thing out there in New York, Sandy? Okay, all the time, the conservatives voted against. 180 of y'all voted against to help them people down there. But because there was two states that voted for Obama, you guys decide y'all, they didn't deserve no money to get help. Sandy went through that like Christina did Louisiana and all
sure,
the
did
other
you
states.
Research?
Well,
do you research?
Do
you research anything or
sure
do you just take Alex?
I'm not sure we're all this conservative. I mean, let's be honest. When the last 2 years of George Bush, now hold on, the last 2 years of George Bush, the Congress was controlled by Democrats, liberals. The first 2 years of Obama, they controlled the House, the executive, and the Senate. I mean, I'm not sure, you know. So I'm not sure where all these conservatives or how these conservatives are wrecking it.
Let me interrupt here because here's the reality. You're trying to say that the 108 politicians voted against Hurricane Sandy relief. I didn't vote against anything. I'm not an elected politician. So that y'all stuff. Well, you just said y'all. So let's get this much straight, okay? The reason that they initially did not vote on the Hurricane Sandy relief wasn't because of the Hurricane Sandy relief. If you've done your homework and read why they didn't vote on this and why they didn't do anything right away, it was because they didn't put a bill forth for Hurricane Sandy relief. They put Hurricane Sandy relief on the back of a bunch of pork barrel spending. That the only way they could get relief
God.
For Sandy.
Please.
Oh my
Y'all
God!
Me
read
with
it.
Pork barrel.
Really,
all the pork bear, the conservatives spending all this time. Don't
well,
come with that madness,
now,
dude.
No.
Why y'all trying to
now,
always
this,
come?
Here
what
we
was
go.
All this when Bush was in the White
Here we go. I got to cut him off because he ain't listening. I just can't help that. I'll bring you back on. Are you listening now? Now let's be fair about this. I'll let you make your statement, okay? But you got to be fair, too, all right? Where was this when Bush was in office? No, I don't think so because you're on this one-way slant. Where was this when Bush was in office? We were doing the same thing then that we're doing today.
Man, y'all didn't close nothing down when Bush was in office, and Bush lost most jobs. He won the worst president this country had.
Here we go. We called. Who said Bush was the best president we ever had? It wasn't this show. It wasn't this show. We call everybody to the carpet. I don't care if you're Republican, Democrat, Green Party, Libertarian, Tea Party, or other. If you're wrong, we're going to let you know it. George Bush, in my opinion, was just as bad as Barack Obama. There's
what
no
Obama did so bad that he got to be wrong. When he, this man had created more jobs, he had
saved
the country.
Obama
but
has
you know
not
what?
Jobs.
He, who
again,
killed Bin Laden?
Again, who killed Bin Laden?
Who killed Bin Laden?
The Navy SEALs. Oh, but
who killed Bin Laden?
Which
who
one do you want to,
when the,
you want to talk about Bin Laden, or do you want to talk about jobs? Because if you're just going to sit here and try to praise Obama's name without
I'm going
to
praise him
because
I think he's a good president. I'm going to praise him. You don't like him. I like him.
I appreciate you liking him. I'm glad you voted. That's all that matters to me. I don't care who you voted for. But the reality is, if you're going to sit here and talk to my audience and spew out facts that aren't facts, I'm going to have to call you on it. The majority
you can't
of jobs,
call me because I'm going to call you on what I think.
I beg your pardon. Majority of jobs that Barack Obama so-called created, the only jobs that have been created by Barack Obama have been adding government jobs, which cost you money and me money. He has
they lost more government jobs. They didn't even create that many government jobs.
You know, my curiosity is getting the better of me right now. Caller, what do you do for a living?
What I do for a living? I run a group home for people with mental health.
You run a group home for
government money. Okay. Well, I just wanted to get that.
So you get your funding from the government, right?
I run a group home for people with disabilities.
And where do you get your money from?
Well, you got people who got mental health who get disability, so they need a place to stay.
Right.
Okay.
Where do you get the money from? Is it private money or government money?
So who's threatening to cut off checks from people who really
it's a simple
need
question.
It,
private money or government money?
Huh?
Private money or government money?
It's their money.
It's
American money.
It's American money. So it's government money.
Well, they're American? See, that's the problem with y'all. Everybody's looking out for a handout, but y'all.
No, that's the problem. That's the problem with the mindset. I'm actually trying to find common ground with you, and you don't want to. You're not interested in common ground.
Because
you're trying to have a rational
discussion. Make somebody looking out for a handout.
I did not see that at all.
How long is that crazy ass shit y'all talking about? These crazy ass white men gonna burn in hell.
He's got to go. I'm done with this white man crap. I tell you what, that's the problem with America, right there, folks. You got some clowns out there that don't have a clue of what the hell is really going on here. That want to sit here and praise Obama because he's a black man.
Yeah.
Well, Obama
and,
can
and
be black.
Did he say white people are going to burn in hell?
Oh, I know. And that's
I'm sure that makes Bill Clinton and Joe Biden is Barack Obama's vice president and Hillary Clinton, Harry Reid, all the Democrats. I'm sure they're feeling real cozy right now too.
That's exactly what's happened really since Obama got in office. That is just a clear indication of how divided we are racially. This guy doesn't want to know the truth. This guy's living on a government dime. He's living on a government dime. He couldn't say that. He had to say, it's America, it's America. Well, I live in America, pal, and in my America, I've got to take care of myself. God bless you, you're making a living. But I tell you what, a lot of times when you're talking out here like you were tonight, I really think you're a patient at that facility, not the guy who runs it, but that's just my opinion. All right, Ed, we're going to take a quick break, come back, and we're going to stick with where we're at. I want to talk a little bit about Cyprus, too, and what's really going on over there. And let's talk about what it's really costing Americans today. And we'll use New York as an example. Folks, call the numbers 858-683-1326, 502-805-0334. We'll be right back and listen to the Ed Spricker Show on the MVM Radio Network.
Oh, being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Spricker of the My View Matters Radio Show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound.
everybody. Gather around. I'm here to give you anything you like. You want free college, energy, mortgages, whatever you like. You have come to the right place. Why? I'll tell you why. Who can take your money?
Who can take your money?
With a twinkle in their eye.
A twinkle in their eye.
Take it all away and give it to some other guy. The government.
The government.
The government can.
The government can.
And who can tax the sunrise?
Who can tax the sunrise?
Who can tax the trees?
Who can tax the trees?
And let you run a business and collect up all the fees. The government.
Man, I gotta tell you, folks, I had to go on break. I'm laughing so hard at this guy, and I apologize. You know, you can't reason with the with these ultra left liberals who are used to these handouts. You just can't do it. They don't want to hear the truth.
To me, it's amazing when people they hear what you're not saying. I mean, we weren't even talking about Obama, but. But then they go so hard into the race card and stuff. And I was just, as we were talking off air, I said, you know, Obama doesn't do that. I'm not a big fan of Obama, but, mm-hmm. you know, he has enough dignity. He doesn't play the race card. I mean, every once in a while there may be an allusion to something, but it's just, it's not him. It's not the politician. You know, every once in a while a politician will try to make some hay out of it. But, you know, the people who support Obama, truthfully, would probably embarrass Obama.
Well, it's really fascinating, too, because, I mean, you know, Obama is half black and half white. So for every one of these guys who say he's the first black president, you're lying. They're flat-out lying. I could also say that he's my white president if I wanted to, and I would be right. So it really doesn't matter. You know, this whole race card is only a race issue to the black community at large. Now, that doesn't mean everybody there. A lot of people realize this is nothing but a race bull crap. But this guy here is apparently nothing but a race baiter. You know, it's the white guy this, the white guy that. You did this, you did that. I didn't do anything. You didn't either. We bring you guys the truth. If you don't want to hear the truth, I don't need to hear from you. I mean, that's the bottom line. You know, I love guys like that because he is a prime example of why we need, one, more education in this country, two, primarily in communication skills, and three, just exactly who the racists are in this country. It's the ultra-leftists, the racists in this country. Those are the only ones that ever scream racism. So I just find it hilarious. But,
yeah,
you know,
I mean, as it goes, we're not racist. I don't think we've ever done or said anything, you know, blamed it on race one way or the other. Truth of the matter is, all I really care about is my wallet and, you know, where the potholes are in the road or where they aren't. You know, like, really.
Yep.
It's not about race to me. It's about money and liberty. You know, I want some money. I'd like to keep as much as I can. I'd like to be as smart with it as they can and, you know, leave my rights to me.
Oh, it's hilarious. Those guys, he's from Denver, you know, so I already feel sorry for him because Denver is fast approaching the same thing that everybody else is. Denver's mayor is corrupt as hell. We actually sent Chief Robert White to Denver, so their police force is now corrupt as hell, if it wasn't already. The only difference is, in Denver, they were screaming that the whites were racist and they were too strong against the black man. Well, now you got Chief White out there, who's a black man, who's going to go out and be strong against the white man. So it's just comical. It really is. But enough about that because, you know, we've got other things going on. You know, an interesting thing I saw today because now that he brought up now that he decided he wanted to bring President Obama into this, there was an interesting story today coming out where House Speaker John Boehner said that he absolutely trusts President Barack Obama, that they have a great relationship, they're open and honest with each other, and that they both agree that the U.S. doesn't have an immediate crisis in terms of debt. How do you sit here and make that statement?
Well, when you can print money, you don't have an immediate problem in debt. And they're getting away with it right now, whether it's foreign countries buying our debt and carrying it at ultra-low interest rates or whatever. The trust, it doesn't all come due at one time. No, we don't have an immediate problem. What we have, and Boehner wants to take some of the heat off himself, I guess, all politicians do, what we have is an imminent problem with debt. It might take 10 years before it completely, 10, 15 years before we completely hit the wall. But, that's no reason to speed up. That's no reason to act like it's not here because it's coming and you can't stop it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll start addressing it. So we have an imminent problem with debt, not an immediate problem with debt. So he's sort of right, but it's also a huge cop-out.
Well, at the same time, though, we've got a couple $100 trillion that aren't on the books, long-term obligations. And, the foreign nations aren't buying up as much of our debt as everybody likes to think they are. The Fed is buying up most of our debt, and they're continuing to print money for it. So, we may not have an immediate crisis. It may be an imminent crisis, as you say, or something along that line. But the reality is when we're borrowing over $1 trillion a year and we're not doing one damn thing to account for that money, we've got a serious problem. And here's part of why we have a serious problem. Go to personalliberty.com, and I'll put this link in the chat room for you guys as well. This is an interesting story, primarily because it talks about part of the handout mentality that our caller decided to bring up. 10 years under Mayor Bloomberg in New York City has really forced New York City into a serious financial crunch. When you look at the entitlement base and you look at everybody taking entitlements, food stamps, et cetera, Michael Bloomberg has run New York for 10 years now. The number of New Yorkers that receive food stamps has more than doubled. That's an alarming stat, Ed.
Yep.
That's an alarming stat. What this essentially means is that food stamp enrollment went from 800,000 at the end of Giuliani's term to 1.8 million last year. And it's primarily because Bloomberg has been out aggressively recruiting for new food stamp recipients. Should the government be out there recruiting people to take advantage of government benefits?
Well, in the name of nutrition, yes. It's okay if they say, look, don't go hungry. Don't let your kids go hungry. Take it. And I think, if that's what they're doing, which is probably what they're doing, I see some value in that because, it's America. We shouldn't, people should get a hand up. And we don't want our people starving and with malnutrition. But if you find if you go out and actively find people at need and do it, yeah. But, again, that's government's way. It's the Band-Aid way. When I hear numbers like that, what I'm hearing is quality job creation. It must not be taking place. I mean, Wall Street in New York is making lots of money, and I'm sure in Albany, New York and stuff, and at City Hall and stuff, I'm sure everybody's doing quite well. When you get numbers like that, it's just telling me that people aren't making enough money. There aren't enough jobs. There's not enough competition for workers. And, that's competition for workers is what drives wages up, not some government mandate. So that's what I hear in there. It's like, wow, you got people qualifying for food stamps and governments, actively seek them, whether they should or shouldn't. But they're out there, and it's because their incomes are too damn low. And it's like, okay, Bloomberg, why don't you address the income issue as opposed to, just the eligibility issue and stuff?
Well, see, and that's interesting because, I kind of agree with you there. But in 2002, SSI, the Supplemental Security Income, was part of the Social Security program, roughly shelled out about $3 billion each year in New York alone. It was the largest entitlement program used by New Yorkers, When you couple that to today, where you're still spending 2.9, almost the same amount, but you went from $1.28 billion in food stamp use to more than $3.4 billion. Now you've went from $4 billion overall just in those two programs. That's not counting your Section 8 or the other programs. Just in those two programs alone, you shelled out $4 billion. Now you're shelling out over $6 billion today, 10 years later, after him. So you've more or less almost doubled this by the time he leaves. And then you look at the cost of living there that we talked about just a couple of weeks ago. I mean, I use cigarettes as an example, and bottled water, $15 a pack for cigarettes. You know, bottled water, $15 for bottled water, you can get here for $3. You know, so taxes have to go up to pay for all of this. At a state level and a local level, those taxes have got to be extremely high. Then the federal government is going to have to subsidize everything for all of this money. So our federal taxes are going to continue going up. Then you've got, you know, all of the other stuff. The cost of living is outrageous in New York, and the people still make minimum wage. You're still making $8 to $10 an hour there that you make here in Louisville, Kentucky, and you're paying 4 to 5 times as much for goods. Is there some kind of a problem here that I'm missing? And, oh, by the way, don't forget that Bloomberg decided that he was going to cause a little deal in 2011 because he was trying to ban the use of food stamps for soda purchases. But since he couldn't do that, then, of course, he decided he wanted to make the soda smaller so that you can buy twice as much. The hypocrisy of the liberal left never ceases to amaze me. How about you?
Well, whether it's liberal or conservative, that's just an elitist for you. I mean, he's an elitist. I mean, he knows better. You know, let's face it, there are right wing elitists too who know better how you should behave than you think you know how you should behave. But he's micromanaging. They've got crappy schools. They got crime problems. They got poverty problems. And Bloomberg, keep your eye on the right hand, don't pay attention to what the left hand's doing, kind of thing. It's like, hey, let's go to court and let's fill up the headlines in the papers with 20-ounce sodas and let's talk about gun control and do so in such a hurried manner that we realize, oh crap, we can't, all our police are now illegal, you know. And it's amazing what they do. It's just politicians. It's the same old crap. It's bait and switch. It's a diversion. Let's argue about that. Let's argue about gay marriage. Let's argue about flag burning. Let's argue about prayers in schools and stuff. But they don't want to get into, like you say, let's argue about food stamps. And, you know, let's work on creating jobs. Let's work on freeing up businesses so businesses create jobs. People don't need to be on food stamps. You know, let's do stuff like that. But that's hard work. And that's the kind of stuff that you lay the foundation for, and you might not actually bear fruit on it for a number of years. And it might bear fruit when you're out on, oh, my God, you know, the guy who gets elected after you might get credit for what you did. Can't have that now, can we? So, you know, keep up with the distractions. It's just stupidity. I mean, it's like arguing over whether you want to use safety yellow or safety orange or safety pink in a warehouse. You know, where you're losing your ass and you're not making any money, but you're arguing about what color safety paint you want to paint the steps or something. I mean, it's just stupid.
Well, it really is stupid, and it's interesting that you talked about guns too, because that's one of the things that. You know, instead of dealing with the problems you're talking and solutions you're talking about, like freeing up business to create jobs so that you don't have to have food stamps, you know, creating a work environment, giving people opportunity, you know, you just mentioned guns as one example. Well, it's interesting because, you know, when we talk about the divisive thing, the Senate Judiciary Committee last week went ahead and approved a measure that was going to reinstitute the assault weapons ban. That's supposedly the big story since the whole Sandy Hook thing. You know, well, the reality is, that the bill is going to go to the entire Senate. They're not going to pass it in the Senate. They're not going to pass it at all. If it gets to the House, I doubt it's even going to get a hearing in the House. But this is big news, right? We can do this because we're going to do this assault weapons ban, and nobody in the right mind expects it to go through.
Has been for months and months and months.
Well, that's it. Dianne Feinstein.
And the lazy-ass news media still gets to use the stock footage. You know, just pull it off the shelf, roll that reel of Sandy Hook, roll that reel of the kids. You know, it's easy. It's easy for government. It's easy for the media. So that's the crap we get fed.
Well, that's exactly it. Senator Dianne Feinstein out of California, she knows this. Feinstein's a good politician, but she's a Nimrod. You know, when she put together this assault weapons ban and proposed this damn thing, she knew full well that it was not going to become law. But she knew that the people who voted for her are anti-gun nuts. So the only reason she did this was to get votes. It has absolutely nothing to do with whether or not it's the right thing. It was all about keeping herself in power. And that's the thing, you know, that actually our caller, I wish he would have listened to that instead of trying to play the idiocy game, because that's the whole thing. They work against us. And this is another good example of that. And, you know, on the heels of that, we've got a story coming out about Fast and Furious that came out today. A federal judge has ordered mediation in a lawsuit over the congressional efforts to get the records that they had requested on an operation Fast and Furious. Judge Amy Jackson Berman issued the mediation order today after, you know, of course, we know that GOP House Oversight and Government Reform Committee and the Justice Department said they hadn't been able to reach a settlement. What's fascinating here is Attorney General Eric Holder was found in contempt of the House, which led to this whole situation, because he refused to turn over records related to this program. We've got Dianne Feinstein up there talking about an assault weapons ban for American citizens. I don't think, when you look at the contrast between Eric Holder's Justice Department and the way that they've handled this Fast and Furious situation all the way through, and then you look at the proponents for the Second Amendment rights who say that we need this to protect us from a tyrannical government, I can't think of a greater contrast that would prove the Second Amendment is needed more today than ever than this story itself. How about you?
Well, yeah, and statistics bear it out, and just the sheer gross numbers bear it out. It's like they're not going to do it. And whether you want to talk money or number of people, I mean, 100 million gun owners, whatever. It's look, like you were saying earlier, it's not going to pass. She knew it wasn't going to pass. She wrote it so extreme she knew it wouldn't pass. You know,
right.
They say the poison pill is what they call it. Hey, this was not a compromise. This was let's go in and let's. I remember a couple of days after Shanfield, she was on TV and she said, "I'm going to introduce an assault weapons ban." And it's just like, well, hell, the lobbyists are just about to go crazy now, aren't they? You know, the gun lobby is going to get all sorts of money. The anti-gun lobby is going to get all sorts of money, and we're going to be played for fools. And 6 months after we see stock footage for the 700th time, then it'll die, and they'll come up with something. They'll close the gun show loophole or something like, you know, some teeny weeny little thing that was, it's just a minuscule percentage of gun ownership anyway. They'll come up with something. You know?
Well, it's really interesting.
And it'll be for what, you know, and the debt will be bigger, and the General Accounting Office will soon tell us that Social Security is going to, it's going to be bankrupt. Oh, crap, you know, 9 months sooner than we thought last time. You know? But, yeah, but we'll be preoccupied for 6 to 9 months with gun control. Ooh.
Well, it's really interesting, too, because, you know, the talk about a small world. You know, the guy who is being touted to replace Hilda Solis as the Department of Labor is none other than Tom Perez. He's Obama's nominee to head the Department of Labor. Now, what really makes this interesting is Perez, of course, goes on. Labor organizations love this guy because he's anti-business and pro-low-income immigrant worker, illegal or otherwise. So they're going to love this guy. But when you talk about the Fast and Furious and everything else, you know, Perez was an assistant attorney general who's in charge of the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division. That's who Obama has picked to take over the Department of Labor. However, a new report just came out from the Justice Department, an IG report, that challenged the testimony Perez gave to the Commission on Civil Rights when he claimed that there was no political leadership involved in 2010 in the decision to dismiss the defendants from a lawsuit against the new Black Panther Party. Now, you remember all that in 2010. Perez testified to the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights, there was no leadership involved at all, yet the IG report found clearly that this wasn't exactly true. Top political appointees, including Attorney General Eric Holder, was brief and indicated their approval of a decision to dismiss these defendants. So Perez's testimony did not reflect the entire story regarding the involvement of political appointees, according to the report. You can look at this report yourself. You know, over at FoxNews.com, and yeah, like, that's Fox News starting trouble again. No, it's not. This is an IG. As a military member or a veteran, you know, I'm used to these IG reports. We were inspected each and every year. That's what the IG does. They don't do their job based on political findings. They do their job based on facts before them. If there is anything that I don't think is political in the political world, it's the IG, the Inspector General's. You know, so they found that Perez essentially lied. And this guy is now going to go to the Department of Labor if he can get approved. And quite honestly, I don't know why they wouldn't approve him. I mean, they've got the numbers to do that. What does this say about Obama? You've got the Fast and Furious scandal with Eric Holder. You've got the new Black Panther Party getting away with voter intimidation. You know, Eric Holder approves of that. And Obama goes ahead and gives one of Eric Holder's attorneys, you know, a job as the head of Department of Labor to pay him back for protecting Holder and the new Black Panther Party. What does this say about us going forward?
Well, truth be told, unfortunately, I believe it's the same on the right or the left. It's just political cronyism. I mean, these are people. It's not a matter of whether they're the best person for the job. They are people whom can be counted on by those in power. I mean, he can be counted on. I mean, I'm sure if Barack Obama needs something, if he needs cover, if he you know, needs a favor. Wants to do something for the immigrants, or wants to do something for, you know, he's a go-to guy. He is a reliable ally in that office, and that's basically, and it's the same under George W. Bush. That's what we're about. We're not about the best people. We're about reliable people that can take orders from the top down and carry them out, and we'll be the fall guy if necessary. So,
you get
what you get with that. That's just what you're stuck with. You're not hiring the best people. You're not appointing the best people. You're appointing the most reliable people in your eyes. And
let's call a spade a spade. You're appointing all the yes men, so that you can say that everything's their fault. Because they're going to say, yes, yes, it was. I mean, that's the bottom line. Let's go to the phones. 805 number.
Hey, what's up, Ed? It's Mayo.
Hey, Mayo. How are you, sir?
Not much. Yeah, I think reliable is the wrong word. Lapdog, or like you said, yes, man.
Okay.
Kind of caught. I mean, what's amazing to me, that I mean, you're talking about the food stamps in New York. The state of California, just, you know, that state uses one-third of all the federal welfare money, that state alone. And here locally, SNAP, right, I don't know if it's nationally or just locally, but since Kroger's and some other grocery chains have, like, Starbucks, little delis and things that people can use their SNAP cards in there, well, now certain businesses like Yum Foods, you know, they're trying to get let people use SNAP, you know, for fast food.
You know? Well, essentially, but, I mean, anymore, you can use food stamps for just about anything. Now, I've got to tell you guys this. My mom and dad divorced when I was 12. My dad was forced and disabled about 6 months later, okay? So for about a year, we were stuck using food stamps. We didn't have any money. It took him 5 years back then to get Social Security approved, and he was totally disabled. It was hard to get. It wasn't easy. It was crazy how hard it was. And we had to use food stamps for a little time. And I tell you, back then, you used food stamps for food. You didn't buy toothpaste, toothbrushes, toilet paper, Cokes. You didn't go out and buy bags of chips or candy bars. You used it for your essentials, bread, milk, and potatoes. That was basically it back in the 70s. You used it for real food. And you actually had stamps. You didn't have these little things that look like debit cards now. You know, there was a stigma attached. When you went in, a $1 food stamp looked like was the size of a $1 bill, but it was brown. A green one was $5, and a blue one was $10, or vice versa. You know, and you had to pull these out of a coupon booklet. You had to tear these things out. You had to give them to the cashier. And you didn't want anybody to know you were using them because you felt like a failure. You felt there was some stigma attached to it. But now, SNAP, you can use this. I mean, I've seen liquor stores actually advertise food stamps welcome here. Liquor stores advertise food stamps welcome here. So we wonder why the cost has gone up so much. And then, of course, we're using the debit card mentality. So people go out and sell the value that's on the card for money, and then they go do whatever they want to with the drugs, whatever, because they don't need it for anything else because they can get everything on it. What happened
even
to
back
that?
When it was stamps, you could people offer $40 in food stamps,
sure,
or $20 cash, uh-huh, because you didn't have to show an ID or anything. And that's part of the failure,
sure,
of the system, the accountability.
Well, you know, and
yes,
that's
there's a stigma attached, but...
Well, that's the thing, too, because even with the EBT card, you're supposed to show an ID. All cashiers are supposed to ask you for an ID anytime you use a debit card, credit card, or EBT card. You know, none of them ever do. And quite frankly, in many cases, they're told not to even bother with asking for ID because the store doesn't care. They just want the money. I know this for a fact.
Yeah,
okay,
they want money. They want the money, and you know, and that's the other side of the, you know, the government assistance equation is it is in no uncertain terms. It is a subsidy for it's a subsidy for the food retailers and you know and the liquor stores and stuff. It's a subsidy. It's like the government saying, hey, look, you know, we'll provide people. It's just a pass through. That's all it is. And people get a little angrier if they start thinking about it that way. But it's like, you know, it's only half the existence of your EBT card or whatever that you're using, you know, for food stamps and government assistance. Only half, you know, the intention there, only half of it is for the recipient. The other half is absolutely get up more business for big business, mind you, you know, because it's, Hey, Walmart got to love them. Kroger's got to love them. Hire's got to love them.
Oh, they do, believe me.
These big stores love them.
Sure they do.
Budweiser loves it.
Go ahead, Mel.
I just started saying, everybody, I mean, you know, quote-unquote subsidies or quote-unquote free programs. Well, none of it is free. We either crank out more dollars, you know, we print more money for this, which lessens the value of the actual dollar, or it comes from taxes. I mean, that's what, you know, a lot of our politicians have forgotten. They're, you know, nothing is free, you know, except maybe air and sunshine. But all these programs that they assign, you know, just like your the song that you play, you know, the government can, or, you know, they keep taking. But when is the government going to actually do something and put, you know, a program or a what's the other word I'm looking for? You know, some type of actual help program, like they had the TRA underneath.
Well,
the problem you've got is,
you know, it's been a gradual transition. This isn't something that we blame Barack Obama for, like we get accused of all the time. This has been a gradual transition. I blame the liberals and the Democrats, because what has happened over the last 30 to 40 years is they have started using the system. They have started putting more and more money into this system to make more dependent Americans. More dependent Americans are going to give you what you want, which is to make sure that you keep power.
Yeah.
They don't care about getting bankrupt.
I actually, and even though I am now a Republican, I actually a lot of times will blame the Republicans more than I do the Democrats, because that's what we expected from the Democrats. When the Republicans were in complete control, they may not have gone that exact route.
Mm-hmm.
But they thought, well, hell, that's a pretty good game. Let's do the prescription drug benefit. We can give free stuff away too. And then it became a race. It's like, you know, who can give the most free stuff away? Who can make you feel better? Who can give you a little something to make you to increase your self-esteem and fill your belly up just a little bit more?
Well, what happened to the Republicans' backbone and morals? I mean, used to they actually stood up against things like that. And
wait
it was
minute,
the government
minute,
helped
minute,
you pull yourself.
Wait a minute, Mayo. Now you're just making statements that I can't even listen to with a straight face. Backbone and morals with any politician?
Yeah,
I mean,
it's kind of hard to believe, but some of them actually used to have it.
We think so. But the big difference is this, because, you know, up until about 15 or 20 years ago, these guys could lie to our face and we couldn't call them on it. So we assumed that they had backbone or morals or integrity because we listened to their speeches and believed what was coming out of their mouth, because we were trained that people are going to tell you that. They're going to try to tell you the truth. But with the advent of Freedom of Information Act, with the advent of the Internet, with the advent of so many tools that are available at our for us to use today, you know, now we can call them on this crap. Now we can hold them accountable. And that, so we're not seeing anything different today than has been going on for a long time in politicians. The only difference today is they've never had any backbone or morals, but today we can prove it. That's the difference. We've got to wrap this up. We are well into overdrive. Mayo, I appreciate the call. I really, really do. Thank you so much. And I actually appreciate our caller from Denver. He's a little on the nut job side. He's too much into this daggone left liberal crap, but by God, at least he takes the time to get involved. Mr. Martin, final thoughts.
Well, final thoughts, you know, I'll dovetail back to the caller and where we went from there. You know, the fact of the matter is it is everybody's fault. And just like our caller got completely distracted on Barack Obama in black, you know, half black, and evil white people for 30 years wrecking the economy and all these distractions. It's like it was all about it. The passion was great. But the fact that this individual was completely distracted from the facts with an emotional argument, and whether that's the mainstream media, whether that's the political spin machines, whether, you know, who knows where that comes from. There's no shortage of sources because emotions is a lot easier to gin up and get going than is, you know, a good cognitive process. But it's a distraction, and that's the thing. We have been distracted over and over and over. I mean, it's Biggest Loser, American Idol, football. And, you know, hey, okay, I'm distracted. The NCAA tournament, you know, and we get distracted on sexism or misogyny or racism. And it's just, it's always something. It's gay marriage or no gay marriage, gay rights, no gay rights, flag burning, freedom of speech, all this little crap that we get preoccupied with. And it's like, gosh, we're doing broke. Gosh, we're tearing up thousands upon thousands of young people fighting over piles of rocks in faraway countries because they tell us somebody, you know, we're distracted again. Somebody wants to hurt us, you know. And I just wish we'd just quit being distracted and then the public could just say, you know what, we don't really care anymore. Get the budget fixed. You know, compromise, do whatever you got to do, quit playing politics, fix it. Treat it like your household budget. If you were in this kind of trouble with a household budget, beat up and fix it. Get to work, boys. Grow the hell up and quit playing this distraction game, you know, touch your ass, whatever the hell it is. It's very juvenile the way they're doing it, and it's equally juvenile the way the public buys into this crap.
Well, it's interesting to me because everything in this country has become emotional, and that seems to be the biggest problem. You know, as our first caller tonight made sure we all knew, you know, emotions cause problems. They don't cause or help aid solutions. You know, the thing is, we can sit here and be angry about everything. We can sit here and moan, groan, bitch, and complain. We can sit here and blame everybody. But if we're not willing to open ourselves up and realize that the biggest problem in this country isn't Barack Obama, George Bush, John Boehner, Rand Paul, Ron Paul, Marco Rubio, insert name here. The biggest problem in this country is you and I together. Because we continue allowing ourselves to be manipulated for whatever reason. We continue allowing ourselves to be used and abused. We continue allowing ourselves to be emotional over silly arguments that aren't going to fix anything. In the meantime, we see cities like Detroit who are getting ready to go bankrupt. We see places like California, as Mayo pointed out, accounts for one-third of all the government assistance spending. We see places like Birmingham, Alabama, who's already went bankrupt. We see liquor stores now taking food stamps. What we see is a general population that doesn't want to take responsibility for themselves, much less anybody else. It's easy to sit back and say, oh, the government should do this for you. But the reality is the government has to have money to do it, and we don't. We have too many people taking something for nothing, most of which can do something to avoid it. That's the problem you've got in America. It isn't a Democrat problem. It's not a Republican problem. It's a uniparty problem. It's a politician problem. But more importantly, it's our problem together. It doesn't matter what side of the aisle you come from. You are implicit in the problems in this country unless you take a stand to help recognize what the real problems in this country are and get involved. It is that simple. Mr. Martin, that's it for tonight. We'll see you tomorrow night. We actually didn't get to the Cyprus story. We'll try to talk about Cyprus tomorrow night because I know you're going to have a lot of thoughts on that. So we'll get into that story tomorrow night. Thanks so much for calling in. Thanks, Mayo, and thanks to our caller out of Colorado. We appreciate you guys and everybody in the chat room. And that's it for tonight. We'll see you later. Have a great night, folks. Take care.